Welcome to The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley. It's the intersection of politics and culture. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. We start out by taking a look at protests around the United States aimed at breaking lockdowns in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Various states have seen these protests, from Michigan to Colorado to Ohio to Pennsylvania to Texas to California. They've been encouraged by the president, and there's some evidence that right-wing and pro-gun groups are helping to organize them. Now, at face value, these protests are trying to get governors to lift restrictions put in place to delay the spread of the virus. However, one thing we should keep in mind in Donald Trump's America: nothing should be taken at face value. I'm going to repeat that. Nothing should be taken at face value. You might ask yourself, why would thousands of people across America put their own lives at risk by ignoring social distancing guidance to protest restrictions that have been widely endorsed by scientific and medical experts? There could be more than one answer here, quite possibly. Some may think the restrictions are draconian and deprive them of their liberty. If you've seen any video coverage of these rallies, you will see people carrying placards and posters and whatever, saying precisely that, that their liberty has been somehow denied them by the restrictions put into place to, and let me say this again, stem the tide of the pandemic. Some may be business owners who face ruin as people stay home and don't patronize them. Despite efforts to help them, many people have been thrown out of work. In the United States, it's been virtually unprecedented. Many believe reopening the economy of their state could bring back some form of normalcy. However, the protests ignore one simple fact. Most Americans support the lockdowns and are staying at home. Most people, especially Black Americans, totally reject the notion of one Trump advisor, Stephen Moore, that the protesters are somehow linked to Rosa Parks. This is, of course, lunacy, but we've seen plenty of that since the pandemic began. And the Rosa Parks analogy is particularly galling, insulting. I can't think of enough different words to characterize someone who is saying that people who are risking their lives to come out and protest, and I say risking their lives and the lives of others, to come out and protest for their own ends, whatever they may be, are somehow linked to a civil rights icon. That's just galling. There may be one other reason for the protest, though. The current situation does not bode well for Donald Trump's reelection chances. That's why most of the protesters are his supporters. You might say it's crass to think a politician would overlook the peril to life in order to improve reelection chances. Yet here's Donald Trump lowering the political bar to the point it's almost on the ground. He knows that a quick return to normal is his best path for another 4 years, even though I believe many of his advisors, and certainly his scientific and medical advisors, will tell him, and maybe already have told him, that there will be no quick return to normal. Even though there are some states, and it's ironic that those states are in the South, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, have begun relaxing restrictions in the way that the protesters in northern states, like Michigan, Colorado, California, Pennsylvania, Ohio, they're protesting so they can be like Georgia, so they can be like South Carolina. And of course, it will take some time to assess the fallout from the lifting of these restrictions. Now, the pretext in this case, and you know, one of the things that we have to look at here is exactly what Donald Trump is doing and why he's doing it. He is encouraging protesters, in this case, to ignore his guidelines. He is encouraging thousands of people to come out to the streets of their state capitals, ignore social distancing, which are part of his guidelines, to protest what they think are restrictive measures by their various governors. And the important part of this is that the governors that he is, in theory, dogging out here, the governors that the protesters are targeting most frequently are Democratic governors. Not all Democratic governors, but Democratic governors. And when Donald Trump talks about liberating places like Virginia and other places, he's talking specifically about Democratic governors without, in most cases, talking about Republican governors. And the pretext also is about gun ownership and attempting to frame lockdowns as somehow violations of the Second Amendment. And you can look this up. Trump has mentioned the Second Amendment in several of his laudatory tweets or whatever it is that he's using to communicate with his base. How gun owners can assert that right if they're dead is anybody's guess. A cynic would argue that Trumpsters and gun advocates are pimping the coronavirus pandemic for their own selfish reasons. It's also not for nothing that these protests have grown as data is starting to show the disproportionate impact of the virus on people of color. And believe me, I've looked at several of these rallies and protests. I don't see that many people of color, and I do see people waving Confederate flags. And in point of fact, there were some people that were even, I believe, in Michigan, holding swastikas. And the governor of Michigan, Governor Whitmer, pointed this out, and somebody comes back and says, well, they were pointing out how Nazi-like her policies are. That's nonsense. That is utter and absolute nonsense. Let's be clear. Would somebody want to argue that the lockdowns that are taking place, the restrictions that have been put in place, for the length of time that they have been put in place, are worse than what Britain went through during the bombing by the Germans, during the Blitz, when people were sleeping? I can imagine Britain saying, oh, gee, you know, the subway's dark and it's dank and whatever, and we don't want to stay down here anymore. Well, when the stakes in violating those lockdowns were being bombed in your house, people followed the restrictions. When it came about that they couldn't keep their lights on, they kept their lights off. They did what they needed to do, and Americans did too, to win a war. And despite Donald Trump calling himself a wartime president, the simple fact of the matter is, he is willing to bend himself into whatever shape he wants to try and get himself reelected, to try and speak to that base. And yet, and I think this is important to note, even in the middle of all this, there are heroes. I'm specifically talking about the healthcare workers who blocked a protest in Denver. They understand far better than the protesters the stakes involved in ignoring social distancing to make a political point. They didn't give their names, and I got to give them credit for that. But we should all thank them, and I mean thank them profusely, for striking a blow. A blow, in this case, for sanity. Up next, sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open it and remove all doubt. Some examples coming up. This is The Intersection.
You're listening to The Intersection of Politics and Culture with Mark Riley.
You know, the coronavirus, COVID-19, has had one unintended consequence. It's created a cadre of so-called experts, not because they know anything about the pandemic, but because they are media personalities with a certain amount of credibility with the public. Now, to be fair, this is a novel situation. We haven't experienced COVID-19 before. Therefore, it's not like in a in the case of a battle or in the case of other issues, political issues, whatever, where you can kind of like, you know, go and get a Rolodex or a computer printout of experts on different policies. There are a very small number of medical and scientific experts, two of which, Drs. Fauci and Birx, we hear a lot about and we hear a lot from, and we should. But they're not the only ones that we hear from. You know, it's kind of crazy in a way who we are hearing about this and some of the misinformation these people are promoting. Now, of course, having a great deal of credibility with the public does not necessarily apply to Kellyanne Conway, professional spinner for President Trump. I'll get to the others in a minute, but Conway, who coined the phrase alternative facts without even flinching or turning beet red, deserves a special mention. Last week, when she discussed Trump's decision to halt funding for the World Health Organization, which I contend was nothing but a diversion, she said the following, and I'm not making this up. Quote, "This is COVID-19, not COVID-1, folks. You would think that people charged with the World Health Organization facts and figures would be on top of that. This is just a pause right now." End quote. You can see the problem. Conway actually thought there were 18 previous COVIDs. She didn't know that the 19 stood for 2019. And she is a spokesperson and senior advisor to the President of the United States. Now, a member of the public might be forgiven for not knowing these things. However, I'll repeat this, Kellyanne Conway is not just a member of the public. She wasn't on TV because she was some random member of the public that some producer picked out and said, okay, let's talk to her about the coronavirus. A spokesperson for the president is supposed to know better, isn't she? Maybe she does. Maybe she misspoke on purpose to convince Fox News viewers, where she made this statement, that they ought to be suspicious of the World Health Organization. No matter what the reason, it's a good bet her boss won't take her to task for that particular gaffe. And you know, again, it is, as far as I'm concerned, inexcusable. I'm going to repeat that. Inexcusable that a spokesperson for the President of the United States would misspeak about the fundamental nature of the coronavirus. Then there are the two doctors, Phil and Oz. Neither are experts on coronavirus, but they don't have to be. They're Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz. They're personalities, and that seems to be enough. Let's start with Dr. Phil, who I admit I've watched on occasion. He's not an MD, but he weighed in on the lockdown by saying, among other things, that 360,000 people a year die from swimming pool accidents. He also compared smoking and car accident deaths, saying the nation didn't shut down over those numbers like they are for COVID-19. He was so far off on the swimming pool deaths as to be laughable. He said 360,000. The number of drowning deaths in the United States, drowning deaths, not swimming pool, drowning deaths, total deaths by drowning in the United States per year is about 3,700. Meaning Dr. Phil exaggerated in addition to confusing an accident with a contagion. He tried to clean it up, but he really didn't do that great of a job. And, you know, keep in mind, the 360,000 figure he quoted were worldwide deaths from drowning. Worldwide, even though he was trying to put it in the context of the United States. And again, he tried to clean it up. But how do you have people? How do you compare a Dr. Phil and a Dr. Fauci? How do you do that? How do you have somebody who gets on Fox News again and says, with a straight face, there have been 360,000 swimming pool deaths in America last year And the country didn't shut down because of it. And of course, he came back and said, well, you know, these were bad examples. The idea that you know, you can compare car accident deaths with a contagion is a bad example. And then he went back over and said, well, you know, we want to make sure that, everybody's safe. He said all the right things to try and correct a really bad error. Then there's Dr. Oz. Aside from pushing the use of an as yet unproven drug for the treatment of coronavirus, he also went on Fox News. You see a pattern here, folks? Fox News. Where else would he go but Fox News? And Dr. Oz said reopening schools was an appetizing opportunity. His words, not mine. Given it would possibly cost 2 to 3% in terms of total mortality. That's right. He said, and you know, we need to be clear about these things. He said that reopening schools was a good idea if the mortality only went up by 2 or 3%. More dead people, folks. You see how this seems to run here? People seem to be comfortable. Whether it's the protesters in these different states or whether it's some of these so-called experts talking about the coronavirus, they seem to be comfortable with a certain number of deaths. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not comfortable with saying, okay, to open up the economy, we can tolerate a certain number of deaths. To reopen schools, we can tolerate a certain number of deaths. Where I come from, that just doesn't work. What these people seem to be saying is that there is, in fact, a tolerable number of deaths that we can bring to the altar of commerce. And they're getting it from the top, folks. They're getting it from the President of the United States, who said at one point, well, if we have 100,000 or 200,000 dead, that means I did a great job. Again, I didn't say this. Donald Trump, the elected leader of the free world, said this on behalf of us, on behalf of Americans. This is like, I don't know what kind of world we live in these days. I don't know what kind of pretzel logic people actually use to make it look as though any of this makes sense. And of course, Trump's latest move is to say he's going to sign an executive order that essentially ends immigration to the United States because he's trying to save jobs for Americans. Hey, a huge number of Americans aren't even working right now. And once the coronavirus pandemic starts to plateau in some cases and perhaps start a downward curve and people do start going back to work, trust me, Americans are not going to have to compete with foreign workers. The fact of the matter is that businesses are going to try and hire, I think, the same people they ended up having to lay off. Doesn't that make sense to anybody? But yet, this is how Donald Trump decides to run the country. And I got to tell you, I believe that he does these things as a diversion. He encourages protesters as a diversion. He halts immigration as a diversion. A diversion from his own stunning lack of competence in handling this thing from the beginning. And he knows that as time progresses, his incompetence will be in the rearview mirror of most Americans. Even now, as recent polling, and I trust me, I've dog polls many, many times. But the latest polling says, A, that most Americans agree with the lockdowns and the restrictions that have been put in place in their own states. And most people disapprove of Donald Trump's handling of the pandemic. Now, it's not, you know, 90%, 10%, so more like 53 to 47, somewhere in that neighborhood. But there are a majority of Americans who think he isn't doing a great job with this. And part of the reason why he's not doing a great job with this is because he's got an outlet, Fox News, even though he may criticize them, he's got an outlet that will turn around and put people who don't really have any expertise in diseases, contagions, viruses, or anything else for that matter, and turn around and make them sound like they are recognized experts, largely because people recognize them from media. They're on TV, for God's sake. Again, these folks seem to believe that there is an acceptable number of lives lost at the altar of commerce. Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz had to walk back their statements. And why are these people granted this kind of access? It is simple celebrity. The fact that people know who they are. Keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. The next time you hear people reciting talking points as if they are fact. Our final segment is about racism. Racism on the part of young people and the consequences of sin. This is The Intersection, back in a flash. Welcome back to this, the final segment of our episode of The Intersection. Glad you're with us. Thank you so much. You know, too often, people of my vintage tend to think of racism as the province of older people who lived during a time when it was seen as tolerable. After all, I grew up during a time when the South was still rigidly segregated, the North was subject to de facto segregation in housing and other areas. And the fact of the matter is that we saw those of my age live through the civil rights movement, through the Black Power movement. We lived through a lot. And we saw racism attacked by a very large number of very good people. And of course, we asked ourselves, would we ever live to see a black president? And the fact is, we did. But you know, it turns out that there are strains of racism among younger people as well. And I'm not talking about the Bull Connor situation where you sick dogs on civil rights workers and that sort of thing. What I'm talking about is exemplified by two people, Stephanie Freeman and Jeffrey Hume, high school students in Georgia. The pair posted an obviously racist video to TikTok. TikTok may be worthy of a segment in and of itself. They were apparently unaware that it might get posted to Twitter, which it was. They were condemned by people of goodwill, both black and white. And it ended up getting them expelled from their high school. I believe it was New Carrollton High School. And Stephanie Freeman was a senior at New Carrollton High School. There seems to be some confusion about where Freeman planned to attend college, but that looks at this point like a no-go as well. After initially doubling down on this racist trope, Freeman apologized, kind of, sort of. By the way, Freeman, in her apology, threw her boyfriend directly under the bus. Is there, ladies and gentlemen, a department of stupid somewhere that I don't know about? Apparently, these two, who have seen their lives altered forever, it seems, at least now, not being able to go to college. I think the Jeffrey Hume got thrown off a wrestling team he was part of. And that's just a short-term fallout. Maybe people will forget. But it seems to me that there must be a Department of Stupid somewhere where young people end up doing this kind of nonsense and not thinking that anyone else is ever going to see it. Now, it only lasted 50 seconds, and I'm not going to get into the details of what it contained here. I don't want to soil my time or, in fact, insult your intelligence. But between clueless protesters, a venal president, and racist teens, America seems to have a wellspring of dumb somewhere, and the good people of this country need to find it and stamp it out before America is dragged down a very, very dangerous path. And I mean, let's be real, this is like one single act of stupidity. One. But again, there appear to be a fairly substantial number of these kinds of racist posts, TikToks, Zooms, whatever you want to call them on social media, that are attributed to young people. And I wonder, where do they get it from? And why do they think it's cool? Why do they think it's okay? Why does it make sense to them to do this? Now, you know, I was young once, and I'll admit, I did some really, really, really stupid stuff as a younger person. But nothing like this. There's no video of me talking bad about white people or any other group of people, for that matter. Now, I came up during a time when there was no social media as we now know it. But I can't envision a situation where I or anybody I know or any of my daughter's friends would get caught dead doing something quite this stupid, quite this life-altering. That's the thing that I find amazing. Can you imagine being accepted? And there's no evidence just yet that she was accepted at the school that she told people she was supposed to be attending, but let's say for the sake of argument, she was. Can you imagine a situation where someone was accepted to college and then have that acceptance rescinded for 50 seconds of complete stupidity and racist stupidity? Now, that's not to say that I think there's anything wrong with what's happening to these people, Stephanie Freeman and Jeffrey Hume, or for that matter, anybody else dumb enough to post racism, blatant, ugly racism on social media. It's absurd. It's stupid. And maybe it's just that we live in a time of gross stupidity. But it seems to me that we ought to maybe hit the pause button for a minute and ask ourselves, why in the world are people prepared to act this way? Not just young people. Keep in mind, the protesters that are, you know, demanding that people risk their lives by relaxing restrictions aimed at stopping COVID-19, they're not all young people. Some of them are. I've seen some of them. I've seen people post stuff about Mexicans and Corona beer. I mean, just real, and I have to think that was just like some kind of a joke. But we live in serious times, ladies and gentlemen. We live in a time when a presidential election will take place. America's course for the next 4 years will be decided in November of this year. And at some point, folks, we better get out of stupid. We better stamp out stupid. We better start charting a course for this country. If nothing else comes out of this pandemic, we should be charting a course that says we're going to be better toward each other. We're going to be better people. We are going to be better, smarter human beings than to allow ourselves to get caught up in what appears to be a minority group of people who are following an incompetent, narcissistic president of the United States. It's up to us, folks. I hope we have the smarts to take the right steps. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. The executive producer of The Intersection is Ms. Kim Jack Riley. Until we meet again, please be well.